Welcome. We're at Creatures, Crimes, and Creativity, Austin Camacho's conference in Columbia, Maryland.
I love it.
It's a fun. It's one of my favorite small regional conferences.
Yeah.
I'm excited today to have Brian Paoni with us. Brian, a Salem, Massachusetts native, displaced to Northern Virginia, has been a published author since 2007. You make me feel like a rookie, by the way, with that.
18 years. Like 18 years next month.
Went fast, right?
Wow.
Brian is primarily a speculative fiction author who doesn't know how to stay in his lane. His novels feature an array of subgenres for those readers who dare to venture just outside of realism. Brian is a police detective in Maryland and has worked in law enforcement since 2002. He's a father to four children, a self-proclaimed roller coaster junkie, a New England Patriots fanatic. Go Brady. And his favorite color is burnt orange. And in 2019, he fulfilled his lifelong dream of becoming a proud owner of a 1981 DeLorean, which I've actually seen at some writing event. I remember it was very cool.
I bring them, yeah.
So first off, welcome. It's good to have
you
here.
Thank you for having me, yes.
You've done a lot of different stuff, but I want to jump right into your latest project.
Sure.
Because I'm super interested
about that,
and we're keeping these short. So
right.
First off, why don't you tell them about what you just did, and then tell them the crazy way you went about writing this novel, because this is an insane story.
Wow. So I came up with an idea of writing a novel about a ghost hunt gone wrong. Where there's a ghost hunt, horror is probably my favorite genre to read and to watch. So many horror books and movies involve the owner of the house, weird things happen, so they reach out to the investigators, and the investigators become the heroes, right? They come in and they solve the issue. I was like, no, I want to write a novel about a ghost hunt that goes wrong for the investigators, like flip it on its head. The investigators go in, and that's when it goes off the rails. So I came up with this idea to write a book about a ghost hunt gone wrong inside the Missouri State Penitentiary. But the Missouri State Penitentiary allowed me to stay there for 8 weeks to write this book. They loved the idea. I had to get the Department of Tourism and Travel involved. And for 8 weeks, I stayed there, mostly alone, at night, in the dark. And every word of my novel was written somewhere on that property.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And this is like an actor who loses like 80 pounds for a role, right?
So
right? What a commitment.
What is it? What they call method acting.
Yeah.
It's like method writing. Yeah. So night one, something weird happens to me in real life as I'm typing, the first chapter. So I decided to jot it down and I opened a different file. I used Scrivener and I created a new tab and I started to write down everything paranormal, unexplainable, or just kind of weird that happened to me. At the end of the 8 weeks, my editor talked me into publishing this diary at the end of the book. So my novel, if you own it, you get the actual novel of this ghost hunt gone wrong, which is 100% fiction. And then at the end, you can either be done with it and put it back on your shelf, or you can turn the page and you get the diary of everything that actually happened to me in real life. And I've had, now that the book's been out since June, we had our big book release party back at Missouri State Penitentiary in June, which was so much fun. My book release party, we had a professional ghost hunting troupe called Get Haunted from Pennsylvania. They came out and they did an 8-hour overnight ghost hunt as part of my book release party. So people who came to my book release party also got this built-in ghost hunt with real professionals. But I've had people buy the book and read my diary first. Because they're like, I just want to know what happened to you while you were there. Oh, and then there's a book.
So, I mean, the book's super interesting. I like the genre too, right? I haven't read it, full disclosure, yet.
Yeah,
it just came out. But your story for actually writing this is fascinating.
Yeah.
And so let me ask you, was this as part of like the method actor thing? Was this like, wow, I want to go in there so I can really create the best ghost story? Or was this also like, what a great hook for the whole book, right?
I'll
tell you, it's amazing as a marketer, right?
Well, marketing wise.
Yeah.
So I had no idea I was going to be able to do what I did. I knew that I loved the idea of a ghost hunt gone wrong on the investigators' heads. It was actually Missouri State Penitentiary, which abbreviated as to MSP. So for the sake of the rest of this chat, we'll just say MSP to keep it short. So MSP were actually the ones who said to me, well, if you want, why don't you just write it here? So it wasn't,
interesting.
Yeah, it wasn't even a...
So you reached out for research to see if you could have access?
I reached out for permission because I'm using their property. And the reason why I'm using their property, if you're like, Brian, you're from Salem, Massachusetts, and you you know, you live in Virginia, but you work in Maryland. Where the heck does Missouri come across? I had gone there on a ghost tour as a attendee. And when I was walking around the buildings, I said, this is the setting. I love the place here. I love this penitentiary. So that's how I wound up picking that place, right?
It's listed as one of the top or the most haunted sites, right?
Yeah. Time Magazine listed it as the bloodiest 47 acres in America.
Oh, my God.
It's actually an article Time Magazine wrote about
it. Like, how many people died there? Do you know the stats?
Thousands and thousands.
Really?
Well, it was opened from the early 1800s, and it closed in 2004. So over almost 200 years, there was the amount of, like, torture and death. Because we're talking about before we had these practices where prisoners were supposed to be treated nicely. They were throwing people. There's a story. There's a book written by a guy who was thrown in the dungeon for 17 years and came out blind.
Oh, my God.
He dictated verbally a book, which is now it's on Amazon. You can read it. And this is the type of stuff they did there.
When was this? Like, what time frame?
A 1910-ish, 1900-something. So it's an old book, right? Yeah. But they've converted it to Kindle since. And this is how awful that place was.
By the way, inspiring as a writer. When next time you have like a procrastination, think of the poor blind guy who spent 17 years in solitary and then dictated a book.
He did not see a single light for 17 years and he came out. Yeah, and he knew he wanted to write about it, but he didn't know how, so he spoke it and someone typed it for him.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Crazy.
So I like the genre too, and it's fun. Do you think growing up in Salem, you say you're from Salem, how much did that contribute to your love of ghost stories?
Absolutely. There is a ominousness that surrounds Salem, Massachusetts. But you're born into it, right? So I was born in Salem Hospital. And I spent the first from birth to age 30 in Salem. So you don't understand really truly what the area means until you leave. And then people kind of get all fanboy, fangirl over the fact you're from Salem. I didn't know that it was important until I left. I also lived in a funeral home for 8 years as a kid in Salem, Massachusetts.
Oh, geez.
So let's throw that out there, right? So we can add, let's just keep compiling the weirdness about Brian. So my parents divorced when I was 8, and my mother moved in with who would eventually become my stepfather, and we didn't really have a lot of money, and they worked for the funeral home. They don't own it, they were employees. And so from ages of 8 to 16, I lived in the funeral home because my parents were the caretakers of it. So they got to live there at a very reduced rent price. If they, you know, shoveled the parking lot when it snowed, if they mowed the lawn when it needed, when they, you know, vacuumed after wakes and funerals. So
lock
there was
up the zombies after.
lock up the zombies. So I grew up with dead people in my house, actual dead people, not like Sixth Sense, I see dead people, like actual cadavers laying out in around me from as early as 8 years old in my house.
Like, do you remember when you first moved in? Was it, 8 years old, was it super scary, super weird? I mean, I assume it becomes your normal very quickly.
Yeah, I think at 8, you're pretty resilient. I think you just take things as it comes. I think if you were like 25 and had an aversion to death and then you were living in a funeral home, there could be like a weird factor. But when you're 8 and your parents are funeral directors, I mean...
It just seemed normal.
Yeah, it's normal, you know.
So tell us I'm just curious about the dynamics of this. So you reach out to the penitentiary,
MSP, yeah.
And they tell you, hey, why don't you just come stay here? So, like, how long did that process from reaching out to them to getting all the permissions and doing the logistics to how long did that take? Tell us about that process.
Sure. So it was June 1st when I reached out to them. And night one of 8 weeks was July 20th.
And so you didn't tell, like, where did you write? You wrote in a cell?
Mm-hmm.
Describe it for us. Like, what does this place look like?
So the Missouri State Penitentiary allows, there's 4 buildings that are still open to the public where you can go see. And I was told, I was given a list of cans and can'ts, do's and don'ts. Uh-huh. And one of the very strict rules was I could not go anywhere but the 4 buildings that are open to the public. Because the other buildings are structurally unsound, right? They didn't want me getting hurt. For insurance reasons.
That's what they told you.
Yeah. No, and I was like, you know what? You're letting me do this. I'm not messing this up. But so we had housing unit 1, which they call A Hall, which is Gen Pop. I'm sorry. Housing unit 1 is the women's unit. Housing Unit 4 is Gen Pop, what's it called, A-Hall. And Housing Unit 3 is Death Row in the insane asylum. And then the other building that I was allowed to be in was the gas chamber, where they actually killed 19 people, were put to death in that gas chamber. And they said, have at it, have fun. So I moved around a lot. There were some cells that became favorites of mine. The energy, the weirdness.
Tell us. Describe the cell. Like, what's in the cell that you liked?
So there's different ones. One of them had a barber chair in it. That was used by the inmates when it was open to get their haircuts. And it is dreary and the paint is flaking, but multiple levels of paint. So you could see that they had painted it over the last 200 years. So many, you could see, right, as deep it went.
Yeah. And, like rings of a tree.
Yeah, and rings of a tree, exactly. And all the cells kind of are like this. They're not boxy.
Oh, really?
So you get this cavernous feeling.
Why is that, by the way? What structurally, why would they be curved?
The whole prison was built with limestone. Oh. I don't know if that played into it at all, right? There was a limestone quarry on the property that the inmates themselves built the cells back in the early times. Yeah, right? So it's very limestone. Everything's limestone. Everything is gray and dreary. And a lot of the cells were painted red. And a lot of the red had flaked off. So in the book, I describe it as Freddy Krueger's boiler room. So if you remember Freddy Krueger's boiler room, his sweater is that red and green. MSP has this Freddy Krueger boiler room feeling to it.
Nice, yeah.
So, but I did have I did make myself a writing desk in General Pop, not in a cell, but like down below when I needed to like get off a cot, where I needed to like sit in a chair and actually have, because when I was writing, it would be on my lap. Uh-huh. Sometimes that gets like...
It's awkward.
Yeah, it gets cumbersome and gets awkward. So I did actually have a writing station in Housing Unit 4 where I would sit and I'd have a desk and I would sit there. But what was crazy was it would be 2 in the morning and I knew that I was the only human being in the building and I would be writing in the darkness and I'd hear cell doors closing above me.
Okay, that's creepy. So how much does this freak you out on the first night when you hear this at 2 in the morning?
I will tell you right now, the staff would laugh at me because, and I say staff because they would have ghost tours and historic tours.
Right.
But if they weren't bringing a tour through, the staff was hanging out in the office, which was buildings and buildings away. So I would be in a building, you know, hundreds of yards from them. I was completely alone. They would laugh at me because I would come storming in the office with my laptop closed with this look on my face. And they're like, what'd you see? What'd you hear? I'd be like, you know, so, yeah.
So were they screwing with you, you think?
No, I knew they were in there. Right. Yeah, and they have their integrity at MSP is so great. They don't allow even guests to scare guests. Oh. They say, they would rather have you go on a ghost hunt and have nothing happen to you than go on a ghost hunt and have them fabricate anything. Right. They want... The real
that would be the end of it, right?
For that would reputation. Be the end of it, right? And there was sometimes that I was in there with only one other human, and she was manning like the gift shop, so I knew it wasn't anyone messing with me because I knew there was only one person on the whole this 47 acres of property. Like, there's no way she was in that building.
Did you go and investigate?
Sometimes I did. Yeah. Sometimes I peed myself and ran. Yeah.
So, like, what else happened besides like a slamming of a cell?
So MSP is known for what's called peekers. Peekers are shadow figures that kind of come out of a room or come out of a cell. You catch them out of your peripheral vision, and when you look, they either move real quickly or they disappear. MSP is known for it so much that they have a t-shirt they sell in the gift shop called Don't Fear the Peeker, as opposed to Don't Fear the Reaper, right? It's kind of cool. And I can't tell you how many times I was writing in the property, and the peekers would come out almost interested in what I was doing. And there would be like 5, 6, 7 of them coming out of cells.
This isn't shadows from some other light or something passing outside.
No, it's just there's nothing outside. You're in the penitentiary. Yeah. There's nowhere shadows could be coming from. And you see these little figures, they come out.
And what kind of light was in there when you're in there at 2 in the morning?
Nothing. So EMSP doesn't have running water or electricity in any of those buildings.
So you had your laptop, right? So did you have some kind of flashlight?
My laptop, I used a red flashlight, red LED, because it doesn't white out things and your eyes adjust to it. So I'd have my red
flashlight.
Just
to make it a little creepier, right?
Right. So I'd have my red flashlight kind of on my desk, up like this, so it was pointing at the ceiling. So it kind of you know, expand. So you can kind of see, and you, I would just see, they would just come out, and it was wild. Coming, like coming up from the cells to the railing, then they would disappear. And that's what MSP is known for, the peekers. Like, people go to see these things.
What possible, like, non-supernatural reason or causation could there be for something, some kind of phenomena like that?
Gosh, I don't know. Maybe your vision is, like, focusing and unfocusing on all the cell doors. Maybe. I don't know. I can't break that down.
Yeah,
you know?
No, like, it's interesting. It's interesting. I don't know that that would create that kind of what you're describing.
And it's not always the same cell, right? You'd be looking, and then there would be, like, over there would be one.
And multiple people are experiencing this, so much so that they have T-shirts, right?
Yeah, over the last 20 years that they've done tours there, this is so common. They have had peekers in the daylight when they're giving their historic tours. And during their historic tours, they're not allowed to talk about the ghosts. Because children are on the strict tours, they don't want to scare them, and also for religious reasons. Can be, people might not believe, right? So you can't start talking about ghosts when you're giving a historic tour. There were so many people, accounts of people seeing peekers at noon on the historic tour who weren't even being talked about ghosts. So your brain's not even thinking about ghosts. There was a Girl Scout troop that had a field trip to MSP.
Who's arranging these field trips?
I know, right? I know. There's a Girl Scout troop that went to MSP, and the entire Girl Scout troop and all the chaperones witnessed a peeker come out of cell 42, walk down the catwalk, and then go back into the cell, across the board. Girls screamed. Some of the counselors thought that there was actually a man up there and ran up to see for the safety of their girls, and it wasn't. There was nobody in there.
So people are so resistant, right, when you talk about ghosts, when you talk about supernatural, whatever. How much of it do you think is, like, trying imbuing these, like, physical observations with, like, a religious element or religious causation, as opposed to saying this is, like, some sort of physics we don't understand, right, or this is something we, you know, it's a real thing we're witnessing,
right?
Like, because people are resistant, then, like, you go into this and you see this, you're seeing the stuff. So how do you explain it?
I think every single person is on their own journey and has their own belief system. Whether religion plays into it, whether science brings into it, whether it's just like a hunger for an afterlife, right? Or a curiosity for behind the veil. So I think, you know, I don't like talking about religion. It's kind of something I do stay away from. But it was brought to me once and said, well, how can someone who doesn't believe in one thing explain this other thing? And that was a very good question, because I think if you bring your religion into it, there's a thought of, well, this might be the afterlife, and is it residual? Maybe it's not the real person. Maybe it's just
energy
that's been left behind, because we know that energy can't be created nor destroyed. It can only be changed or still exists in its form. So maybe religion and science and all that doesn't have anything to do with this. It's very possible that we're talking about just some thin fabric of a past. I don't know, right? I mean, it could be a physic that we haven't even discovered yet. I mean,
I love that you're thinking about it like that, because you're acknowledging that there's some observable phenomena.
Right.
And you're saying, what could be all the potential, right? And that's kind of the way I think you look at stuff when you're objective,
right,
as opposed to, like, you know, channeling it into one funnel, right?
Yep.
But so whatever it is, you believe this stuff exists.
So I'm a skeptic, but I'm a skeptic on like a microcosm. So when a house settles and it pops because the wood creaks, like, there's people who will go, that's a ghost.
Right.
But I'm like, nope, that was the house settling.
Right.
Like, even though, just because we're in a haunted house and the house it doesn't, my joke is that every mop that falls over in the corner isn't a ghost. And there's some people who knee jerk everything.
Right.
They go, that's a ghost. Did you hear that? Did you hear that? And I'm like, yeah, I heard that. It was the boiler turning on. Like, why are we, right? But so I'm a skeptic, but to the point where I believe, but I don't also believe that everything that goes bump in the night is also. So there's this middle ground that I tend to walk.
Oh, you heard my first questions. What is it, something understandable that we could, you know, that could be the cause of this?
But
I can tell you that I've interviewed so many people about, like, paranormal phenomenon, including ghost hunters, And what's shocking to me is people who are not religious, people who don't believe in this stuff, have become just fervent believers right. because they've seen it with their own eyes, right. and they've eliminated all the psychological causes. They've, like you mentioned, the ghost hunters, right? They actually have certain recording measurable material that they can detect a change in an area. Right. Do you want to tell us a little bit about some of this the ghost hunting stuff?
Oh yeah, I love it. So I didn't know any about the ghost hunting stuff. I learned so much writing this book. But so one of my favorite things is called a REM pod. And a REM pod is just, it's a machine and you sit it out and it detects anything from increased temperature changes or energy that goes by it and it goes off. And that's really interesting because when a REM pod starts to react to your questions, that's when I start to go, huh, this is interesting. So you can say, so the theory is that if like a ghost or a spirit is near a REM pod, the REM pod goes off. So you can ask questions. You can say something like, did you die? You know, did it hurt when you die? You know, make the REM pod go off, and it doesn't go off. And you go, am I wearing a blue shirt? And you are, and the REM pod goes off. Then you're going, well, this is weird. Like, when does, I guess what I'm saying with the ghost hunting equipment, when you start asking it questions and the equipment starts reacting, at what point do you go, this isn't a coincidence anymore? Where do I separate coincidence from something is communicating with this gear?
And it's not from like speaking where you're expelling warm air into the environment that could somehow affect this machine.
It'd be way over there. We could put a REM pod over there on that table that's 20 yards from us, right? And talk, and it'll react. And you go, well, how is that happening, right? I was in some sessions while I was writing there where they were asking very specific questions. And you just go, well, I don't understand how it knows. Like, how is it, like, you know. So that's when I go, this is crazy. Like, what? How is this? What's coincidence? Right. You can't have 10 things in a row.
Right.
You know, where it's yes or no questions. And it's not like a Ouija board where you put your hands on it and somebody's, like, guiding it, right? We're separated.
Right.
We have no control over that REM pod at all. We do not control that thing. It's sitting over there. And when, you know, a spirit goes near it or a ghost goes near it and you start asking questions, and you go, you ask it, like, could you, you know, I don't know. Sometimes it starts going off. And you go, hey, could you back away from the REM pod for a minute? And it backs away, and the REM pod silences for a second or two. You're like, why?
So the skeptic in me is thinking somebody's controlling it remotely,
but
right?
No, there's no remote. Like, it's my REM pod. Yeah. I will bring a REM pod. I have control over that REM pod. Like, I brought it from my house.
Well,
and
who doesn't have a REM pod at the house, right?
No, well, I do. I bought one because of this experience. But, like, I've brought my REM pod blazes. I know it's mine. No one is controlling it. There's no remote control.
Wow.
And it's doing the things we need it to do.
That is very strange. When you said, like, one of your reactions was, wet yourself and run, what was that thing that really made you just want to get out of there?
Oh, my God. I was down in the dungeon.
By the way, no story ends well when it starts like that.
Down the dungeon. So the dungeon is where that guy spent 17 years.
Yeah.
They call it Cave Dark. It's where they threw the people, the inmates that wouldn't obey, wouldn't listen, right? Bad. They would pile them up 7, 8, 10, 12 in a cell. And when they fed them, they would only feed them 5 or 6 plates worth of food and they would have to fight.
My God.
They found dead bodies weeks after they had died in cells because the guards never went into the cells.
How horrific.
It's absolutely horrific. So the dungeon is known to kind of be a hotspot for ghost stuff. The cell at the end of the dungeon, the dungeon is a horseshoe. So if you go to the last cell, that was my favorite cell to write in. But I was terrified of it. I wouldn't write it unless somebody else went with me.
Did you get a feeling when you entered it?
It's just terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. You're also at the end of the horseshoe. So if, like, something does pop up, you got to run the length of the horseshoe in the dungeon, right? So, then, like, all the old horror movies from the 80s come back in my head. So when MSP would have ghost tours, I would actually make an announcement to the guests. And I'd say, hey, I'm an author. I'm on property writing a book. And if anyone goes to the dungeon and you see me, grab me because I'll go down with you. I'll write. You can do your ghost hunting thing. So one night I had a woman. She's like, hey, author dude, I'm going to go down the dungeon. Want to come down? I was like, absolutely. I love the dungeon. I just don't love it alone. We were in that cell, and we heard the voice go, do you feel it? She looked at me, and she said, do I feel what? She had a ponytail, and when she said that, something grabbed her ponytail and yanked her head so hard that her ear touched her shoulder. I watched her ponytail yank.
I'm getting chills right
downward.
Now.
Downward. It yanked it so hard that her hair, her ear to her shoulder. She was standing in the middle of the room. I'm sitting writing. She's standing in the middle. There's nobody else in there. In the moment that happened, I heard what sounded like fingernails tapping on the wall behind me, like somebody was doing this. We ran. I ran so fast.
Save
she
yourself.
She ran so fast. But to see her head get yanked, like something had grabbed her ponytail and yanked it down after the voice said, "Do you feel it?" It went yank.
Oh,
and
my God.
That's in my diary.
That's horrific.
Absolutely terrifying. And this is why I don't go to the dungeon by myself.
The old joke is, right? Like, you can't outrun the ghost. I just have to outrun you.
Yeah,
you
know? Right? Yeah.
Oh, my God, that was
something.
Okay, that's unexplainable, right? There has to be some other entity there, right?
I watched it. She felt it, and her head got yanked to the side. And then I heard the fingernails behind
it. So did you go down to the dungeon after that again?
I did, but only ever with somebody.
Wow.
And then usually more than one person after that.
Let's bring the whole team down.
Right. Like,
that is seriously, that's why, like, I'm sure your novel's fantastic. You're a great writer. Like, I'm sure it's wonderful and I want to read it. But that, like, the actual story of you down there is, to me, is like, that's the goal. I still don't know who she is.
I'd love to, like, there's no way for me to ever find out who she is, right? Because she was just a guest. She was attending a ghost tour. So, but I'd love to reach out to her one day and be like, you know, you made it into my book.
Did you talk about it after the event with her? Like, after you guys ran out?
No, we ran and I didn't see her again. No, she may have just gone home at that point.
Yeah, like, no, I think that's reasonable.
She had her
ponytail
pulled. Yeah, I mean,
that's terrifying. I guess you could always put something up on your website about if you're this woman, reach out.
Maybe,
right? Did you take pictures, or would they allow you to do any kind of a video or anything?
Yep, I took a lot of pictures. The back of the book after the diary are photos. And if you go to my website, which is brianpaoni.com, very easy, myname.com, and you click on These Walls Still Talk, which is the name of the book, on that link, I uploaded a whole bunch of photos from MSP. So,
I've got to get that.
Definitely.
Before you leave, I want to get a copy of your book before you leave.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow, that is just terrifying stuff. Well, listen, thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I'm really excited to take a look at this book. That is just, that last story got me.
All
right, well, thank you, Brian.
Thank you so much,
Good luck to your writing.